Welcome to the Creative Soul Podcast. I'm your host, Leah Van Doren, and in this podcast, we explore the intersection of creativity and spirituality and discover what lights up your creative soul. Thanks for tuning in. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Creative Soul Podcast. I'm very honored to bring our guest on today, Val Alcorn. Val is an herbalist, gardener, writer, and artist. She is the owner of Wood Spell Apothecary, where she cultivates resources for folks to connect to the plant world around them. And she is also the writer behind the Substack, The Medicine Garden, and Under the Linden Tree. I found Val a couple of years ago because, as you know, if you've listened to this podcast, I moved to Michigan in 2022, and Val lives in Michigan. She's a Michigan herbalist, and I connected to her Instagram because she posts the most beautiful pictures of nature, and she just has such a beautiful eye for art and creativity. You can really see that artistry in her work, not only with the herbal medicines that she makes, but also in the way that she writes and talks about nature and the way that she talks about what it's like to work with land and cultivate a relationship with land. So I'm really excited to have her on the show today, where we talk about things like gardening as a creative and spiritual act. We talk about the forest and why the forest holds this sense of mystery and myth and magic to it, but also this element of fear and how we can work with fear of the unknown and fear of being in nature. And we also talk about ancestors and how connecting to nature, connecting to the land is inherent in working with our ancestors and learning about where our ancestors come from. So it's a really beautiful conversation, and I'm really excited that it's coming around this time, because it's the perfect precursor conversation to my upcoming creative writing course, The Poetry of Plant Magic. So I shared last week a little bit about The Poetry of Plant Magic, which is the creative writing workshop that I'm teaching in April. We'll be meeting once a week for 4 weeks, April 9th through the 30th. And it's going to be a very experiential class where we will be learning about medicinal herbs, and I'll be taking you through some of their medicinal uses, some of the ways that our ancestors would have used these plants, and some of the magic and folklore that surrounds these plants. And then we will be writing poetry inspired by the plants. So I will be guiding us through journaling and creative writing prompts, and it's a way to connect to the natural world around us by connecting to the inherent creativity and magic and medicine within. So I am so excited for this class. It's already filling up. So if you are interested in joining, please sign up at the link in the show notes. It's $147 for the 4-week class. And if you have any financial concerns, just reach out to me and we can work out a short payment plan, or I have 1 or 2 scholarship spots left. So if you feel like you're really meant to be in this class and you want to join us, just send me a DM at Leah Van Doren. But it's going to be epic. I've been working on the content for the class and some of the herbs that we'll be diving into, like rosemary and yarrow and rose and red raspberry leaf. And we talk about some of those plants in this conversation as well. And you're hearing it here first, but I also wanted to share quickly that I am hosting a retreat in Michigan, July 26th through the 29th, 2024, in Ann Arbor, Michigan. So if you are local or you're in the area, or you would love to escape to the world of nature, I'll be teaching creative writing workshops. There will be wild crafting workshops, herbal tea ceremonies. We'll be getting to know the land and learning how to make medicine out of plants. So it'll be an in-person, nature-inspired, creativity-inspired retreat. So if you're interested in that, just reach out to me as well and I can send you the link. But again, that will be in Michigan, Ann Arbor, July 26th through the 29th. So without further ado, let's get into this conversation with Val Alcorn. Well, hello, Val. Welcome to the Creative Soul Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk to you today.
Yeah, I've been like loving on all of your herbal creations. Just before this call, I took some of the Dreamer's Bitters. I also took some of the Artist's Flower Essence blend that you crafted. So very excited to get to talk to you today. But I'll start off with the first question that I ask everyone when they come on. And that is, what is currently lighting up your creative soul?
Yeah, as we, kind of talked about before we started this, there's definitely some big transitions happening in the business and in my life and whatnot right now. So, you know, when I started Woodspell about 5 years ago, I started with bitters, herbal bitters, because it was really what I was really interested in at the time. And it was just like a way to get in the door. But I always kind of knew that that wasn't going to be the final form. I really didn't want to always just put out physical products. I wanted to do something else. I just wasn't sure what that was. So really the past year or so, I've been experimenting with different things. And I've really just fell in love with writing. And, you know, and writing's always kind of been a common thread throughout my business, whether I've been, you know, selling physical products or not, whether it's in, you know, Facebook posts, blog posts, newsletter, whatever. Writing is really just something that I'm just so passionate about, you know, and I love designing things. And then also with Substack kind of becoming more of a bigger platform now, I feel like that's just been like a creative like floodgate for me, you know, because you can do writing, you can do audio, visual, video, all that sort of stuff that can really just make things not so structured. And I'm a person who just does not do well with structure. You know, I've tried to like be very, you know, organized about things, but I'm just kind of more of a go with the flow sort of person. You know, that's why I was kind of like in the beginning of all of this, not really sure where I was headed, you know, as far as the business goes, but I just knew that I had to do it and just kind of see where it led me. So, you know, having Substack here as sort of a new platform has been really exciting, inspiring to me. Also, you know, the garden is always just, it's like my lifeblood. You know, when I lived in a small apartment for so long, I would always have my apartment garden, you know, on the balcony, that sort of thing. Even though it was just this tiny space, it was just, it's always just fueled me. And, you know, here in Michigan, as you know, our winters are long. And so, but I really love this time of year because even though we can't be growing anything outside, it's really a time for dreaming about, you know, the intention of the garden, about what plants you want to grow, about sort of just the layout and the design and all of these sort of creative elements that go into gardening, you know. And gardening is obviously a very physical sort of task oriented thing, but there's also so much creativity that goes into it too, as far as you could even get into color schemes and, you know, textures, all that sort of stuff. And so there's just so much to it. So I love just diving into all things garden this time of year too. So yeah, definitely writing and garden planning, all that sort of stuff is really just so exciting for me right now.
I love that. That all sounds just so grounding and nourishing and creative. And I feel like maybe I don't really have any experience gardening, and now I'm, you know, would love to, when I eventually have some land, start a garden. But I feel like people don't realize how creative that really is, because like you said, it is the planning and then the intention and the design, and it is so creative to be able to create with earth. So I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can really create sort of like the soul of a place with a garden, you know, you can really just help form how you feel when you enter a space with plants and all of these things. So it really is not only a creative thing, but a spiritual thing. And I think obviously those two things go really hand in hand too. So yeah, totally. Just the garden's always been like the core of just what makes my life tick, I guess.
Wow. Did you grow up like gardening with your parents or grandparents, or how did you... I would love to hear like how you got started being introduced to herbs. Was this something you grew up with, something you were always interested in, or did it come later in life?
Yeah, definitely later in life, kind of. I mean, you know, looking back now, there's definitely some threads that I can kind of follow and see how all of this kind of culminated to where I'm at now. You know, growing up in sort of a very traditional, hardworking Midwestern family, you know, being an herbalist, that sort of thing was never really, it just wasn't even on my mind. It didn't even seem like an option. I didn't even know what it was really for so long. But at the same time, you know, here we don't have, in Michigan, we don't have all of the big attractions of some of the other states and whatnot. But what we do have is a lot of just wonderful natural resources, like the lakes, the rivers, the forests. So I spent so much time just outside. You know, my dad is a hunter, so he has a really deep respect for the woods for the animal life and, you know, what's at stake there. And then at the same time, he's a woodworker. So he's got a really deep mm-hmm. connection to the trees and the wood and how that translates to furniture and, you know, the spirit you can have just in, you know, a table or a chair, things that we don't even think about now that, you know, we've got IKEA and things like that. But really, yeah. when you have a piece of like handmade wood furniture, like that's, it's so special. Like there's such a spirit in there. And even though he's like the traditional, like meat and potatoes kind of guy, you know, there's definitely sort of that spiritual connection for him there. And he'll definitely talk about it as sort of a spiritual connection. So, you know, there's my dad, and then my mom is actually a master gardener. So she, you know, even growing up in the city, she always had like a little garden, and, you know, we were just surrounded by colors, flowers, all of those sort of things too. So it was just always just natural to be around nature. We were always camping, canoeing, hiking, horseback riding, like you name it, you know, that's what we did. We were just so ingrained in the land. But of course, like, again, that, you know, it's a hobby, but it never seemed like it could be a life path until, you know, I actually graduated college with a BFA in digital media. So I started working at an advertising agency. And within like the first few months, I was like, this is terrible. Like, I hate this so much. Like, the corporate world was just not for me. I was like, I need to do something else. So my partner, my husband, now husband, then partner at the time, we just kind of up and moved to Colorado for, you know, a few years. And that completely, like, I wouldn't say change, but it shifted. Well, I guess shift, change, same thing, whatever. It kind of shifted how I saw my relationship with the natural world, because out in Colorado, you know, that sort of lifestyle is much more just commonplace. You know, you have all sorts of people working, you know, professionally and casually with the natural world. And there's so many more resources out there for herbalists and plant people, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, at the same time too, I was also going through, you know, some kind of health issues, some chronic health issues that conventional doctors could not fix. So I started seeing a naturopath for the first time, and it changed everything. Cause I was like, wow, like, you know, they couldn't figure out, through many, many conventional doctors, could not figure out what was going on with me. And then I went to see a naturopath, and it, within like the first two appointments, we figured out what was going on. And I felt like I was actually seen and heard and all of those sort of things. So like with a combination of, you know, diet changes and plants and all that stuff, I was actually able to heal and take my health, my body back into my own hands. And that was empowering. So I was like, you know, a combination of, you know, that initial seed of love for the earth and plants, all those sort of things, combined with, you know, sort of that shift in perspective by moving to Colorado and, you know, dealing with those health issues, really kind of snowballed into me deciding to become an herbalist, to, you know, really start working with plant medicine. And yeah, I guess it's been a really long, not very straightforward journey, but here we are.
Wow. That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. And I love hearing just, yeah, even the connection that your dad has to the wood. And it's interesting for me because I grew up on the East Coast and then in California. And I mentioned that I only moved to Michigan like 2 years ago, and I was very much like a beach person. And being here with the forest and the lakes, it's like, there is something so magical about this land. And like, I never thought of myself as a forest person, but now I'm like, oh my gosh, I could live in the forest. Like, it's so magical. And there's something about the forest that evokes a lot of like fairy tale mythology. Like, I read a lot of fairy tales in my childhood. And I feel like that's something that your work really connects with too. You know, you have the Baba Yaga bitters, and there is this like fairy tale mythic element to your work. So can you talk about like where did you get the inspiration for that? Is that also something you connected with? And also just like, as you went on your plant path, like how did you study plants? Was it more experiential learning? Did you study under someone? Was it books? Like, how did you really dive into the world of herbalism?
Yeah. I mean, I guess just starting off with sort of the maybe like folklore sort of aspect to my work and sort of the intentions behind a lot of the things that I make. You know, I've always been a person, you know, kind of a hopeless romantic, but I've always loved folk tales and, you know, reading books like Women Who Run with the Wolves and Braiding Sweetgrass. And it's just like it lit Spiritual Ecology, which is like my number one favorite book, by the way, if anybody's interested, is it just like lit like a fire in me. And it just like made so many connections between, you know, our physical space and sort of this mythopoetic sort of realm that our ancestors lived in for, you know, there were that link between folklore and the forest and the land and whatnot was so strong in, you know, land-based cultures and whatnot. And it just really called to me, just really inspired to me. And really, like you said, the forest is such a mythical place. You know, it doesn't matter what forest you're in, you know, because I think there's so much mystery about the forest. You know, there's no other landscape where you can be completely engulfed by nature. You know, you've got obviously the soil around you, but then you've got the trees around you and you've got their canopies above you. So you're just completely like, you know, engulfed by this landscape. And, you know, even if you're out in the prairie or the ocean, you know, you still got a lot of wide open space there, but the forest really kind of obscures all sort of reality, you know, so you're able to sort of get into this place of sort of that mystery, that what if, like what's behind that tree, you know, the nooks and crannies where all sort of things could be hiding and, you know, the stories that are there. And, you know, if you think back to, you know, how our ancestors lived, like it's really kind of a scary place. And a lot of times, like sort of those mysterious places also kind of border on the scary because, you know, there's no landmarks when you're in the forest. It's so easy to get turned around. So it's really just kind of confuses all your senses. So it just brings you into a different sort of space. But then if you think about, you know, just like picture, for example, you're walking through the forest and then it kind of opens up and there's just like a huge like oak tree or something, you know, in the middle of your path. It would like immediately evoke that sense of this oak tree is special, you know, because it's so different from all of these, you know, sort of trees that kind of blend in together. So there's really just all sorts of different faces and illusions that the forest can sort of evoke when you're in it. So, and of course now, I think I really got sort of, I guess, enamored with it when we moved back to Michigan because we actually moved into the forest. Like we're not kind of on the outskirts. We're in the forest. Like, you can't see our driveway from the road. We're deep in it. So not only was I, you know, in this land where we have so much forest land, but also I was living in it every single day. I wake up to it. There's, you know, deer and turkeys in my, you know, front yard in the morning. But then, you know, there's also sort of that scary element that I told you about. You know, you can hear the coyotes like right outside your window every night. You know, it's dark. Like it's very dark. There's no light out here. So there's just so many emotions sort of at play when you're in a space like this. So I think that just kind of translated into, you know, my design, my work, my writing, things like that. And it's inspiring too. I kind of feed off of sort of those warring emotions of that fear, the inspiration, all of that. So yeah, that's kind of where that comes from. But as far as the plants go, I definitely started kind of on my own, just trying to identify plants. That's really what it started out as, is just trying to name every single plant in my vicinity that I could find. I'd get like reference books, all that sort of stuff, just so I could learn their names, just so I could know them. You know, just learning the name of something is just so powerful in general. Like it gives, I don't know, an extra connection that wasn't there before. And then you start noticing them when you're just out and about. If you have their name, you'd be like, oh, that's yarrow, that's fringentian, that's elderberry, that's angelica, like all that sort of stuff. Just when you're on, you know, out and about your day, driving down the road, all that sort of stuff. So just really getting to know the names of the plants was the first thing. And then I really started getting into plant medicine by working with Jim McDonald, who is kind of like a, you know, renowned herbalist in Michigan. Everybody knows Jim. If you're an herbalist professionally, probably in Michigan, you've probably, you know, learned with Jim. He's amazing. He does plant walks and whatnot, but he also does apprenticeships, things like that. And, you know, he just has he's such a funny guy, first of all, and he has such a love for the bioregional plants. Like he really doesn't work with more of the exotic plants, like, you know, turmeric, damiana, like all those sort of plants. He's very much focused on what's growing around here. So seeing somebody who's so in tune with this specific land was inspiring and really helped me to learn more about the plants that are around me. I also took a 1,000-hour study program at Chestnut School of Herbal Medicine, which is an online program as well. So I did that. And then, of course, though, I mean, really, the most things that I learned was just working with the plants themselves. You know, like nothing can beat hands-on experience. There's no way around it. Like, you got to experiment. And I know, especially having like the brick and mortar store here and talking to people, a lot of people who come in here might have an idea about herbs and plants and whatnot, but a lot of people are still kind of like hesitant about it. I don't know why. Like, it seems like this dangerous thing to so many people. Like, so many people are hesitant to like start working with plants. I don't know if it's a narrative that maybe, you know, the powers that be kind of instilled in us that, oh, anything grown out here is like dangerous, even though you can see like exactly what's in your tea and stuff. Like, the plants are right here. It's what we've done for thousands of years. Really, we're only a couple generations removed from working with plants full time. Everybody used to be an herbalist. Like, everybody had some plants in their kitchen cabinet, things like that, that they would use for just regular home remedies. But yeah, so there's definitely some like hesitancy, some fear behind it. But once you really start working with them and start with like the gentle plants, the ones that are, you know, tonic plants that you really can't get too much of, it's just a great place to start. And it's just kind of snowballed from there. And of course, I'm a huge book nerd. So I read all the books, all that sort of stuff. I'm obsessed. So really anything I can, you know, get my hands on about plants, I will consume it.
I love that. Yeah. And it's so interesting. I'm so glad you touched on the fear piece, because even going back to that feeling of like being afraid in the forest, that's something that I've been exploring a lot, because like there's something about nature. Like, it's so inherent to us and our being and the ways that our ancestors lived, but yet there really is this fear element. So I felt that, like, not only being in the forest, like, what if I encounter animals, or what if I encounter spirits? Like, I get fearful of like, what if some like spirit is trying to connect with me in the forest and there's no one around, or what if I come across a person? So there is like some fear there. And then even just in the general fear of people approaching plants and herbalism with this sort of fear, I'm so curious about that, because I feel like for me, I'm very new to all this just in the last like couple years. And at first I started like really wanting to forage and just taste everything that was around me. And then I quickly learned that you cannot do that, because I had a little mishap where I was confusing Queen's Anne's lace with poison hemlock. And I had a little mishap there, which everything worked out fine. But I think that like experience was like, okay, no, like I really have to be knowledgeable. I cannot just go out there and taste everything. And then even with the idea of foraging, you know, people say like, don't forage near roadsides, don't forage near this and that. And it's like, it's kind of like this world of the unknown, but yet there is something so known in our being about it. And even like, for me, even though I've only been exploring it for the last couple of years, it definitely feels like I'm tapping into some ancestral knowledge. And like you said, we've only been removed from it for a couple generations, and I can connect to my ancestors and know that this is a practice that they had. And it feels like when I'm working with plants, I'm connecting to that ancient lineage. It's like, I know things before I know things. So I wonder if you can talk a little bit more about like, yeah, what could that fear be, and how can we work with that fear when we might have fear of that unknown or the natural world, or like not knowing if things will hurt us and not knowing how things will affect us. And just, yeah, that element of the unknown, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, it's like anything, a lot of things that we do in life, there's a risk that you take when you do it, like any extreme sport. Like, if you're going to be rock climbing or, you know, surfing, whatever, like, of course there's a chance that you could fall or do something like that or hurt yourself, but people do it anyways, because there's that love there for, you know, the plants, for the natural world, for the act of doing it, all of these sort of things. So herbalism really isn't unique in that point, because a lot of these things that we choose to do in life all have that element of fear. It's just whether we want to deal with that fear or not. And it's totally fine if you don't want to deal with it. You know, that's totally up to you. Not everybody has to like doing plant medicine. Not everybody has to like rock climbing, things like that. But it's really about just, you know, being, and of course, like for your example too, like that's one of the few plants that are really poisonous, at least in Michigan anyways, like poison hemlock. You know, there's a few other ones that like, if you have even a little bit of them, you'll probably get real sick. But for the most part, we have a lot of very gentle plants that we can work with. And it's all about just, like you said, being knowledgeable and, you know, learning them inside out. That's why, again, starting with identifying every single plant in your vicinity until you know them top to bottom, until you can recognize just different plant families, like the square stem of the mint plants, or sort of like the irregular flowers, things like that. And, you know, just really, or honestly, I think too, going with people like Jim McDonald, who does plant walks, so you can get into the field and have somebody who does this for a living, who knows what they're talking about. So that way you can feel safe and confident in, you know, ingesting the things that he's telling you to ingest, things like that. So really going with somebody who's knowledgeable, I feel like will give you the sort of the confidence boost to kind of go from there. Like I carried a reference book, you know, with me all the time when I'm out in the woods. So really just getting to know the plants on an intimate level and you're good. Like, I mean, now I there's no fear left in me when working with plants, because it's just, you just get to know them on that sort of that level, that relationship. But of course that respect should never go away. Like we should always be respectful of, you know, when there are boundaries, when the plants are telling us no, all those sort of things too. So yeah, it just needs to be a balance between respect and just having confidence in yourself, knowing that, again, people have done this for so long. So like we have this power, this right to be able to work with plants on that level, because that's a relationship that we've cultivated for so long that we can really rebuild if we want to.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, I love it. There's like a million questions that I want to ask you, because yeah, just the spiritual connection to plants, but then something I've been really interested in that we've touched on is just our ancestral connection to plants and our connection to our ancestral lineage. And I've been loving your Substack publication Under the Linden Tree, all about your ancestors and their connection to plants. And I found a lot of resonance because I also have a similar lineage. My mom is from Russia. And so I have a lot of, I guess, like Soviet Eastern European ancestry. And so I'm wondering if you could talk about your connection to your ancestors and like, what does connecting to your ancestors do for you in your personal life? How does it deepen your spiritual practice, your connection to plants, all of that?
Yeah, I think, you know, learning about our ancestral lineage not only brings us connection, but it can also bring us accountability. Because look, like being a settler or an immigrant in America, whatever you want to call it, is complicated, you know, regardless of the intent. You know, our ancestors came here onto land that was already inhabited. They cut down forests for farmland. Some, you know, even worse things probably happened, or definitely did happen too. So that's a very, you know, difficult thing to sort of comprehend. Like that's a cold, hard fact. Like no matter what the intent is, we're here benefiting from sort of that loss of the indigenous people here. And then at the same time, you know, you've got this other truth that most people that came here didn't, you know, come here for a get rich quick scheme, anything like that, especially from more of the oppressed countries like Ireland, Poland, Ukraine, Italy, China. All of those places were being occupied by many different powers. Like where my ancestors came from Poland, you know, they were basically being torn in three. Like there was Austria, there was Russia, Germany, like all three of those countries were basically claiming Poland as their own. Like Poland didn't exist for many, many years. And so, you know, people coming to this country was an act of survival at the same time. So, you know, how can I feel shame for somebody trying to survive, but also holding accountability for the land that they then occupied, you know? So when you start learning about these sort of ancestral stories, you're able to really start deciphering the layers and, you know, trying to figure out not even figure out. Like, there's nothing to figure out because it is what it is. Both of these truths can exist at the same time. And that's, I think, what learning your ancestral lineage can really uncover, is showing a path to accountability, a path to connection, both of those things. So yeah. I think, you know, depending on what quote unquote side you're on, there's a tendency to ignore one of those two truths, you know? So like being able to acknowledge them both is, I think, a great way to honor your ancestors, but also, you know, be accountable for how we move forward in the world now, now that we've benefited from, you know, they're moving here, things like that. So yeah. And I've kind of touched on, you know, my family coming from Poland, and they actually moved to Michigan. So I live only, you know, a couple hours away from where their original farm was. And I actually went to visit it for the first time this past year. And it was incredible. It was, I mean, the original farm doesn't still exist, but just being in that general space was so amazing. It was so wonderful. And I heard so many stories, and there's so many stories too, that history kind of forgets, and where the lines really get blurred, you know, like I have stories of my, that were passed on, of my family living basically kind of hand in hand with the indigenous people here. You know, our winters are really long. So we've got a lot of stories of our family sharing a dinner table with the indigenous people, of trading off my great, great grandmother's back porch. You know, they found a burial ground, you know, back in their farmland, and which they basically conserved for over 100 years, and it's still there right now. You know, the indigenous people would come to the farm and camp for a week at a time every single year, up until probably whenever my family left. And, you know, there were researchers that tried to come in and excavate the burial grounds, and my family was like, no, like, you're not doing that sort of thing. So there's relationships there too that, you know, we forget about. And this, of course, doesn't justify anything at all. I'm just saying, you know, we need to uncover these stories just to get a better perspective of what happened there. Yeah. So yeah, I think definitely, you know, learning about your family's story, and also just if you can find any plants that sort of grew ancestrally in their land or that they brought over here, is so powerful. Like, I just met my, oh my gosh, she must be like a great cousin or something like that. She actually still lives like right down the road from our original family farm, and her garden, she grows horseradish, she grows strawberries, hollyhocks, these plants that are so ancestrally Polish. And it was just like such a, and she had honeybees, and honey is such a huge part of Polish culture too. And so it was just like so inspiring to like see her garden, and then also to start growing those plants in my own garden. Because a lot of times we lose those ancestral stories. Like, I'm lucky to even have some of those stories. So a lot of people that, you know, don't have those things, the plants can really be a bridge to, you know, connecting back to those ties. Like, we don't need to know the specifics. We just need to know the feeling of, you know, growing those plants. It's really powerful. It's not really something I can really put into words until you actually do it, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. I think it's interesting. I think thinking about how somehow there's something, because I think this was true for me in my journey that's just starting, but there was something that there was a connection there between land and then ancestry, and something about how thinking about the land and where, you know, we are from, where our family is from, the people that lived on the land, like the stewards of the land. And then somehow that leads to wanting to know about our ancestors' lands and what plants were they working with. And even just thinking about some of the histories of these plants, you know, the fact that some of these plants have been, you know, I was just reading about how yarrow has been here for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. So it's like, how many people have, you know, used yarrow, connected with yarrow, grown yarrow, cultivated yarrow. It's like thinking about, and it's like the plants. Yeah, like thinking about the relationship to the land, and there is just some like deep feeling there that is experiential, and that does, I mean, at least what it did for me is really like deepened my sense of belonging, not only to the land that I'm currently on, even though I've only lived here for a couple years. I found out that I had some ancestors who were buried 20 minutes away from where I'm living.
Oh, wow.
And that was like a wild connection, because I had no idea that anyone in my lineage had lived here. But then also thinking about, you know, my lineage overseas, and yeah, it's just a really fascinating, layered, and complex relationship. And like you were mentioning, just, you know, that those connection points between, there's connection, there's also accountability. So it's just way more layered and nuanced than I think the history books can tell us or not tell us, or even just, you know, what we see in media when we're kind of learning about this stuff. But it like deepens your sense of like rootedness in a way, and knowing that you are part of the whole.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and like you said, not only do we belong to sort of our motherland, but we also belong to the land that we live on too. And of course, like you said, that's complicated. It's just complicated. But, you know, I read a really great thing. I don't remember the exact quote, but it was from the book Underland by Robert McFarlane. And it was like, by denying yourself, you know, the joy of the beauty of a place, of, you know, of loving a piece of land, you eliminate any chance of reparation. Because how can you repay something that you don't love? I don't know. It's just, it's complicated. It really is. But I think you can love the land you're on, you know, experience the land you're on with respect, of course, but also be accountable and try to find ways to, you know, make things more equitable for everybody, to, you know, somehow just support that movement of going to a more equal future. And of course, I don't have all the answers. I really don't. Because like I said, it's so complex, these sort of things, but just sort of acknowledging that, I think, is so important just in general. So just keeping that always in, you know, the back of my mind. Like for me, I don't, you know, really sell any plants that are indigenous only to this land. Like if it's, you know, an ancestral plant I use, that's fine if I grow it in my garden. But, you know, I'm not working with black cohosh. I'm not working with like blue cohosh or any sort of like lady slipper, those plants that are specific to the indigenous people here, that are sacred to them, that, you know, belong to them. You know, there needs to be that respect there too. So I think working with plants, you know, especially in my garden, I'm kind of moving more towards just growing in the garden rather than relying too much on foraging, because, you know, again, I feel like that's just for the people in general, for the animals, all that sort of stuff. So yeah, just trying to find those lines and find what's authentic to you. Like, I feel like, you know, it's so easy to fall in the trap of just doing what social media says, of what somebody tells you you should feel or say or think or do. But like, what actually feels authentic to you? What feels good to you? You know, what feels accountable to you? Are you doing enough? Are you, you know, maybe doing too much and you're wearing yourself out? Like, there needs to be something that feels right in your own soul.
Yeah. So well said. Thank you. Yeah, I'm curious about your, you know, kind of going along with this, but I'm curious about your connection to bitters and what, you know, because I love that a lot of your work was, I mean, I know you started it crafting the bitters, and I think it was from you that I really learned that like bitters are such an ancestral medicine, and it's something that humans have been taking for so long. So will you explain to someone who doesn't know what bitters are, why might you want to use bitters, all of that?
Oh my gosh, how much time do we have? But no, I'll keep it short. But yeah, definitely bitters are something still, even though I've been doing this for so long, that people are like, what are bitters? Like what, like people just don't know what they are. So yeah, you've got your sort of cocktail bitters, which I feel like people are more familiar with, you know, to basically they flavor drinks. And then you've got your herbal or medicinal bitters, and those are to help improve digestion. And really, before Prohibition, they were kind of one and the same thing. Like, they're both made out of these very bitter plants, bitter herbs, and things like that. They're extracted in alcohol. It's basically the same formulations. But once Prohibition came, those sort of things got separated, and the craft cocktails were made more for flavor, whereas the herbal medicinal bitters were made more for medicinal purposes, things like that. But yeah, back in the day, people would take bitters just for the flavor and for the medicinal benefits. It was just like a common everyday thing people had in their medicine cabinets. Like, I was reading some old Polish herbals, and they had some lists of like some like apothecary kitchen essentials, and bitters were in there from, you know, back in the 1800s, people just had them around. And yeah, as far as the bitters themselves, what really fascinated me about them was just looking at the history, you know, going back millions of years when plants first started growing on land, they were all basically toxic, like very toxic. We couldn't ingest them, things like that. And most toxic plants are very, very bitter. So they had all these very bitter compounds. And then once we humans kind of showed up on the scene, obviously we had to eat. And so we kind of started co-evolving with the plants. So the plants became a little less bitter, and we sort of, I guess, developed these sort of functions to basically be able to digest and ingest these very bitter plants. And kind of what happened over thousands and thousands of years is that we developed this sort of integral relationship with bitter plants. It's why we have, I think it's, oh my gosh, 25 bitter taste receptors on our tongue, whereas like other flavors like sweet, salty, umami, they only have like 3 to 5 taste receptors. Like those didn't come on the scene for much longer. So like this bitter flavor was so ingrained into our body. And because of that, we kind of developed this sort of relationship, kind of like the mycorrhizal relationship between like fungi and trees, where they kind of rely on each other. Obviously plants to some extent relied on humans to basically plant their seeds and continue their generations, where we kind of relied on the bitter plants to help basically balance and just control the metabolic function of the body. Because basically what happens when you take bitters is the first thing that it touches your tongue is those taste receptors. And the taste receptors are like, oh no, this is a toxic plant, because it's remembering, you know, all those thousands of years ago when everything was so toxic. And it's like, okay, we need to get this out now. So it basically sends signals to the gut. We have neurotransmitters in our gut. And it's like, we need to get moving. We need to get this eliminated quickly. And so basically it's a jumpstart for the whole digestive system to basically get the plants out. And obviously this is useful if something is actually toxic, but at the same time, it's useful for just everyday digestive flow. And, you know, so many times, I think, you know, 60% or whatever the number is, you have to look that up. Don't quote me on that, of people deal with some sort of digestive issue in modern America. And it's because we, you know, bloating, indigestion, cramping, all of those sort of things, with just those really stagnant sort of conditions where food's just sitting. We're not getting that sort of stimulation we get from bitter plants, because look at our modern diet. We don't have really any bitter flavors left. Like bitter is kind of like you stay away from it if you can, you know? So by introducing those sort of bitter plants, bitter flavors back into our diet, not only are we sort of connecting with those very, very ancient plants and, you know, how our ancestors worked with them for so long, but we're also helping just like the natural flow of our bodies. We're sort of reestablishing that mycorrhizal relationship between, you know, plants and human. And back, kind of bring it back ancestrally, in Poland, they have this sort of preparation called nalewka, and it's basically a tincture, but a lot of times it's just alcohol infused with plants such as like black walnut. Black walnut is a really common one in Poland, is black walnut nalewka. And it's actually just a tincture of black walnut. And people drink it after dinner to basically help sort of get the, you know, the juices flowing, get the food moving. And it was just something people did for so long. It was just natural, you know, but nobody seems to do that anymore. So just by using bitters regularly, we're just sort of nourishing all of those sort of relationships, I guess.
Yeah, it's so interesting to think about, just like as you were saying that, like how, I mean, to even think that, okay, we have 25 receptors, you know, for this bitter taste. And yet in our modern, like overly sugared world, it's just so interesting that now we've moved so far into the other direction that like something bitter, I mean, even like tasting dandelion greens, you know, is so extremely bitter that we're not used to. And it's like, I wonder why was there this push towards everything being overly sweet? And like, why are we favoring that when for generations and generations, it's like, that was just something that was part of the diet and part of the everyday life.
Yeah, it really, I mean, it's pretty simple. It's because it's easy, like sugar, salt, it's easy to get down, man. Like it's not challenging at all to our taste buds, to our body, you know, that sort of, you know, that bitter response we get Like that's not easy to swallow
Right,
and things like
right.
that. But what's interesting too, so yeah, and of course, I mean, just look at society in general. We're always going towards the easier, the, you know, more convenient, the less challenging, whatever we can do to make our lives not difficult. And of course, that has consequences. And, you know, moving more towards a sugary, salty, mostly sugary diet away from the bitter is just another example of that, really. And what's interesting, though, is, you know, people who do start taking bitters again regularly, they actually, it's really interesting. You actually start craving that bitter flavor again. It becomes like something that you just look forward to having. So it actually helps to sort of diminish sugar cravings. So a lot of people will take bitters solely just to, as you know, a way to get away from the sweets, get away from the sugar, because it's really like your body remembers what it's missing. So if you start taking bitters regularly, you're like, oh man, this is like a part of me, like I need this. And so, yeah, it might be hard in the beginning, but you know, if you can stick to it, your body will respond. It really does. It's amazing stuff. And we're finding more and more about bitters too. Like it's something that our ancestors have known for so long, but science is finally catching up. You know, we even have bitter taste receptors on our ovaries, which is crazy. So like a lot of people like with PCOS or infertility who take bitters, they've actually shown improvement for those conditions by taking bitters, because it just, you know, it directs the gut directly, or it affects the gut directly, but it really influences the body as a whole, just in general. You know, like I said, we've got neurotransmitters in our gut, but also we have it in our brain too. So, and we have that gut brain connection. So, you know, when our gut's happy, our brain's happy. You know, the bitter taste receptors on our reproductive organs, you know, it helps, of course, influences the liver, the gallbladder, the kidneys, you know, everything is connected. So when we just introduce those core sort of elements of, you know, our existence, of our relationships with the plants, everything sort of kind of helps get yourself back into balance.
Yeah. Well, and something I love about your bitters is that I actually love the taste of them. Like they taste so yummy. And yeah, it makes me think, like, I'm curious how do you incorporate herbs into your daily practice? Like, what does it look like for you to work with the herbs on a daily like level to kind of for like almost kind of thinking of like herbalism as like modern day wellness. Mm-hmm. And so are you taking bitters every day? Is that before meals, or what does that look like in just your daily life?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm glad you like the bitters. That was actually one thing that I was really adamant about is when I started making them, is I didn't want something that was just medicinal. I wanted something that also had, you know, flavor and nuance to it too. So I'm glad to hear that. But yeah, so for me, you know, and my, I guess, routine with working with plants regularly changes, especially depending on the seasons, you know, what's in season, what's my body craving right now. Again, I'm not a structured person. Like whatever feels good in that moment is what I'm doing. So like right now, what I'm doing is I do a matcha latte in the morning, and I use matcha, but I also include chaga and lion's mane powders as well that are already double extracted. So I do that. And then I also do a smoothie later on where I'll include maybe some like bitter greens. I love including seeds like chia seeds, flax seeds, which of course are plants too, oatmeal in my smoothie. And I found really that my like PMS symptoms before my cycle have lessened a lot after incorporating some seeds. I know people talk about seed cycling, but honestly, just including any seeds in your diet in a decent dosage on a regular basis, I think personally really helps. At least it's helped me. So I do that. I really like to do, of course, bitters. The best time to take them is actually 15 minutes before a meal. That way your body kind of gets going. It has time to sort of, you know, oil the wheels and everything in there. So it's a good time to do that, especially, you know, depending, and you don't have to do it before every meal, but you know, sometimes people get more bloated or whatever for dinner or breakfast or lunch, whatever, just whenever you can. And I actually really like to have bitters as a sort of alcohol alternative. So, you know, and there's so many sort of trendy alcohol zero proof spirits out there, but I really haven't found anything better than just doing like a glass of sparkling water with bitters in it, like a couple dropper full of bitters. So good. It's easy. You know, a bottle lasts you like about a month or so. It's really good. Maybe like add like a squeeze of lime juice or lemon juice or something like that. So having something like that after dinner, you know, cause I'm a sweets person. I do love sweets. Like I like bitters, but I also love sweets, like especially chocolate, you know? So after dinner, I like to have, you know, a glass of bitters and sparkling water. It's super tasty. And especially, or during, and of course I'll switch it up. Like during winter time, sometimes I want something a little bit warmer. So I'll do like a tea, just like a classic herbal tea, things like that. One of my favorite things to do though is an overnight infusion of herbs. So like maybe herbs that extract well in long infusions, like nettle or raspberry leaf, marshmallow root, rose hips, those sort of herbs that have so much minerals, vitamins, nutrients, and stuff like that. I like to infuse before I go to bed, strain them in the morning and drink them throughout the day. Like I'll just make a big quart sized jar of it. That way you're just obviously getting your water intake, but you're also getting all of that herbal goodness, you know? And it's funny too, because people will come into the shop and they'll be like, you know, what herbs do I take for this or for this or for this? But herbs aren't like for one thing, you know, like they're just, what I tell people is, as long as you're taking herbs on a daily basis, you're already doing something good for your body. You know, basically all herbs are really high in flavonoids, which is just like a natural anti-inflammatory. And as we know, inflammation is a cause of a lot of diseases, chronic diseases in the body. So just by incorporating herbs to in whatever capacity is already doing something so great for your body. And, you know, also one last thing too, is one thing that I've really been switching over is just to have a minimal sort of skincare routine and incorporating plants into, you know, working with my skin and stuff like that, especially now that I'm over 30. So I really like to, my gosh, it's just so, there's something so special and nourishing about just using real plant medicine on your face. Like I love, right now I'm using like a goat's milk, beeswax, lavender sort of lotion on my face. And it's just like the most luxurious, wonderful thing. I'm trying to eliminate any sort of, you know, chemicals, things like that. So just keeping a really simplified sort of herbal routine for skincare too is super important. So yeah, plants are just everywhere in my life. But again, it changes. Like some days I don't have time for that. Some days, you know, it switches depending on the season, depending on how I'm feeling, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, totally. And then for the infusion, do you put that in the fridge overnight or do you just leave it like room temperature?
Yeah, you can do either. It depends what you want. If you want to do like a cold infusion, like some herbs like marshmallow root and rose hips actually infuse better as a cold infusion, I'll put them in the fridge. Other herbs, you know, that you might like as a hot infusion, like nettle or raspberry leaf, you can infuse those in hot water and leave them on the countertop and then drink them, strain them, drink them in the morning and things like that. And again, experiment. You know, I've tried rose hips as a hot infusion as a cold infusion. I just think they taste better and are more nutrient rich as a cold infusion. So yeah, it kind of just, it depends, you know, what works best for you. But yeah, there's really no danger in just leaving it on your counter overnight. As long as it's only overnight, like don't leave it there for like 3 days and then drink it.
Cool. Yeah, I know. Yeah. I was like, because I read somewhere, like sometimes it can go bad and maybe I left one out once and it like tasted a little funky. So I was like, maybe that went bad.
Yeah. But, well, and it depends too. Like there's some herbs that don't extract well as long infusions, like those really like aromatic herbs that have a lot of essential oil content in it, like lavender, chamomile, sage, things like that. Those will get very bitter if you leave them overnight to infuse for that long. And again, because of the bitter flavor, it can be good for you, but it might not be as enjoyable to drink throughout the day. You know, the actual bitter formulation is nice because it's in a dropper. So you take it and you're good, but you don't have to like choke down a whole cup of it or anything like that. So
yeah. Awesome. Well, yeah. Well, you touch on a little bit about your work with Lunica and just kind of how your work has been shifting and changing. And I know you mentioned Substack and you've been pretty active on there, which your writing is beautiful. So everyone should check it out. But yeah, will you talk a little bit about what that transition has been like and, you know, what is Lunica and what can people kind of look forward to from that?
Yeah, I feel like for me, Lunica and the Lunica planner, it's a planner basically, is kind of the future of where I'm pointing my business, not only as the planner, but also other publishing projects in the future, self-publishing, by the way. But yeah, 2 years ago, I started this sort of self-publishing journey to make this sort of, I guess what it's kind of become is like an herb gardener's almanac sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Like it's basically like an expanded version of the Farmer's Almanac, but it has a lot more in-depth writing, more like spiritual sort of journaling options. It's just a really great way to connect with the land, to connect with the garden, to connect with the seasons through every single day, week, month of the year. To really, mm-hmm. So my main goal was to basically incorporate all of the things that it takes to live a land-based life into just a daily planner. Cause I'm planner obsessed. Like I need them. I have so much stuff just going on in my head at all times that I need to physically write it down. You know, I have a Google Calendar, stuff like that, but I really, the only way I can get any sort of clarity is by actually writing things down. So I knew I wanted to create some sort of planner, but I also wanted to incorporate garden planning. I wanted to incorporate essays and recipes and, you know, a phenology wheel and all of these sort of things that help to sort of just put all of the stuff that I love together in one place. And of course, there's all of the lunar phases throughout the whole thing. And, you know, there's a lot of monthly overviews to say, you know, what tasks to do on what day in accordance with the moon, you know, plant leafy crops on this day, harvest crops for storage on this day, all that sort of stuff, just as sort of a guide for how to start working with the moon. And of course, I tell people it's not like a hard and fast rule when you want to start gardening with the moon. It's a guide. It's a guide to start building these relationships, not only with the land, but with the stars as well. Because, you know, we're talking about ancestors, you know, astrology was, along with agriculture, was one of the first things that they did when they started farming the land, was they looked to the moon. People have been gardening with the moon for thousands of years. So there's got to be something to it. You know, these people back in the day didn't have time to, you know, ponder about astrology. It was a matter of survival. So like in my mind, you know, okay, if they saw this as essential to their farming practices, maybe there's something to it, you know? So I really wanted to incorporate sort of the moon gardening aspect into the planner as well. So yeah, in all, it's just sort of a culmination of land-based love into one sort of daily planner. And I love it. It's so fun. I get to redo it every single year. So it's just an ongoing project. And yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Wow, that's super cool. Yeah, I feel like we have been talking about this whole time, but I'm curious just how you would describe like your spiritual connection to the plants. And yeah, I mean, you mentioned the book Spiritual Ecology, which I'm excited to check out. But yeah, what does that feel like for you? And what does that kind of give you in that give and take? And that give and take relationship with life.
Oh man, I would say it's like silence. I mean, there's nothing. Again, like I said, I've always got stuff going on in my mind. There's nothing more silencing than just being outside around, like surrounded by nature. It makes everything feel like nothing else is important, you know, like they're like, this is what life is right here. Life isn't out there. Life isn't in a screen. It's not, you know, the approval of other people or the opinions of other people. It's not even about, you know, what you got going inside of you. It's not about, you know, maybe the health struggles you're dealing with. It's here. It's just being present in this moment and understanding that you're just one part of an extremely large just web. And I know we talk about being, everything's connected, but it's another thing to really like feel that in your bones. And you can't read about it. You can't really write about it unless you know, but it's just being there and just that silence, that utter just like stillness that comes with being around plants, with being in nature. There's nothing like it, man. And I use it every day to reset. I have to be out in nature and, you know, the weather is rough sometimes, but I still make it a point because it's just one of those things. It's essential. It's like air or water to me. You know, I could never, even when I lived in the city, I lived in downtown Denver for about a year or so when we lived out in Colorado. And I would, you know, go into the back alleys to be around just like the wild corners that were, you know, not being, you know, cut over with weed or cut over with chemicals or cut down, things like that. I would just find all these wild like nooks and crannies in the city just to be around the plants. Like it's just, for me, it's Yeah, it's everything. It really is. It's
That's
hard to explain. It's hard to
beautiful.
put into words.
No, you explained that perfectly, and I'm glad I asked because, yeah, that was a beautiful answer. So thank you, Val. And lastly, we love to talk about creative resources. So that's anything that you maybe are currently reading or something you're really inspired by right now. Or if someone wants to, you know, dive into this world of herbal medicine, of bitters, is there anything, any resource that you can recommend? And you've already named some good book suggestions, so I'll definitely put those in the show notes.
Yes.
Because I'm a big reader too.
For sure. Again, huge book nerd here. But yeah, I mean, if you want to, for me, just in general, creatively, Pinterest is my go-to.
Totally.
I know it's like so old-fashioned nowadays, but I love Pinterest. You know, there always needs to be sort of this balance between consuming and creating. You know, no matter what sort of content you're consuming, you also have to balance it with, you know, an equal amount of creating. You can't just consume, consume, consume. You got to create as well. But Pinterest, I feel like, is such like a wellspring of just inspiration that doesn't have all of the noise of other social media platforms too. So like I like art, just art in general, paintings, drawings is a huge inspiration for just all areas of my life, plant medicine included. Like I said, I kind of art was my first sort of passion really. So you can find so many stories within art, not only just about the creative soul, but also about plants. There's so many stories about plants within art. And Pinterest is a great place to find that. Also, you know, garden inspiration, we talked about that. Like there's so many beautiful gardens on, you know, Pinterest, so many links to different like blog posts. So I love, love, love Pinterest, especially when I'm like in a block and I can't think of like something else to do. I have just like different inspiration boards on Pinterest that I can draw from when I need a little like boost of motivation and all those sort of things. So I'm obsessed with Pinterest. I also, you know, the book Spiritual Ecology, definitely highly recommend for anybody who's interested in sort of this plant-based path, but also Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert. Honestly, just in terms of just assessing the creative soul and figuring out how to navigate those waters, it's really inspiring. It's really good as an audiobook too. So I just, you know, sometimes you just need a little push. As creative people, we just can get in our own heads sometimes, all the time maybe. And we kind of put up our own walls, our own barriers to getting to the next step, all that sort of stuff. So that book is great for sort of breaking down the creative process and, you know, even giving you permission to do the things that you want to do. So I love that. You know, Substack is really exciting for me right now. There's a few people on there. I think more people are coming on. I have the Medicine Garden newsletter on there, which I put out weekly for people. And I just talk about all things, whether it be plant medicine, folklore, scientific studies, all that sort of stuff. So that's just like a weekly resource that I put out for people. Also, like you mentioned, the Under the Linden Tree podcast is specifically about Slavic folk medicine, just because there's so few resources out there about that topic. So there's that one as well. Obviously, like the classics, Women Who Run with the Wolves, Braiding Sweetgrass. I know everybody's probably already read those, but Underland, another book that I mentioned there, also really great, especially for this time of year. Like Underland is one of my favorite just wintertime reads to really get you inspired. And, you know, it's nature writing, but it's also got some sort of scientific facts. And I'm a person where I'm very spiritual, but I also love a good scientific fact. Like I love like sort of that melding between science and spirit. So that's one of those books where it kind of instills both of those feelings in there. You know, I don't really listen to a whole lot of podcasts actually, which is weird because I do have a podcast on the Under the Linden Tree Substack. So I don't know. I can't think of really anything there, but yeah, there's just books, man. That's usually what I go to. I love them.
Yeah, that's perfect. I can't wait to check those out. Perfect. And then where is the best place for people to connect with you? Is it on Substack or Instagram, or where would you direct people to?
Yeah, I would say right now I'm definitely most inspired to show up on Substack. So again, you can go to the Medicine Garden Substack, which is kind of just like a general plant medicine Substack, or the Under the Linden Tree Substack. Also, I'm still on Instagram. I'm still on Facebook as well. So you can find me on there. I'm still posting. I'm just, I don't know, I'm kind of over all the noise on there.
Yep, me too.
So I'm still on there. You can find me, but I also have a website. It's woodspells with an woodspells.com. And yeah, you can buy the Lunica planner there. There's some other information about me and, you know, things that I do on the website as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Val. I'm so glad we connected and this has just been lovely. So thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and sharing your herbal creations with us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
I hope you enjoyed that episode and thank you so much for listening. If you like this episode, please feel free to share it with a friend and tell them what inspired you. Or if you'd be so kind, you can rate and review the podcast. And when you do, I would love to gift you my free guided writing meditation that will connect you to your creativity, yourself, and your spirituality. Just go on over to my Instagram at Leia Van Doren. That's LeiaVanDoren. And send me a screenshot of your review and I will send over the meditation. And I would love to hear your thoughts. Stay inspired, stay creative, and keep shining your creative soul.